I can't help but tell just a short story about this. One of the gentlemen who was very helpful, he was very instrumental in getting this meeting started, a guy named Bob, that many of you know, and he unfortunately his work has taken him away from being able to attend this meeting on a regular basis, but he was very instrumental in getting this group started. And Bob had a special place in his heart for H&I work, and in fact, I got the opportunity to meet Bob through a connection with tonight's speaker, a good friend of mine. He used to take H&I meetings into an institution that Bob was a resident of, and we were hoping that Bob might make it tonight to do this introduction, but you're going to have to put up with me. Bob would tell me every time we got together, and we'd spend probably half an hour before the meeting and after the meeting in our car, he would tell me of this this guy, Tim, who was of tremendous service to him and his fellows. And I often wondered if I'd meet him, and it was funny, just a couple months ago, I saw a guy named Tim with a name badge on, and I asked him, "You don't happen to be that Tim, would you?" And sure enough, he is. And he agreed to come here and speak, which is a kind of a big deal in my book, because he lives in Santa Barbara. He came here on his own dime, and we very much appreciate his generosity in supporting what we do here. Let me please introduce you to Mr. Tim.
My name is Tim Whitcomb. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm grateful to be sober today. Congratulations to all the people who took chips. And I do want to thank Bill for asking me to come over and share with you all. It is always an honor and a privilege to be asked to participate in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was with some friends, I guess it's two or three months ago, that up in the Sierras, something that Dave Marquez put together, and Bob Olson was there, and I'm a big Bob Olson fan. He was one of the guys doing the talking, and so I took a couple of guys with me, and we went up there. And as we're circulating, as we do at those functions, you know, walking around, I run into Bill, and he asked me, you know, "Are you that Tim?" He tells me about this group. He says, "But you know, it's a Wednesday night, and it's in Visalia." And I said, "Oh, I'll come over. You know, I'm retired." And then I had a couple of months to think about it, you know. And I thought, you know, why did I tell that guy that I would go over there? But I had an opportunity to do some thinking today because I was driving, and I was, one of the things I was thinking about is gratitude. I was taught to make a list of the things I'm grateful for from time to time. You know, especially when I'm alone with my own head, which always wants to, seems to always want to put sort of a negative slant on things. You know, a sponsor taught me a long time ago to think about what I'm grateful for. And everything that I have in my life that's good is a direct result of my participation in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It all comes from this. You know, relationships with, I have a family, a wife and a family. I have two granddaughters one is 8 and one is 18 months, and they're just a great joy in my life. And I don't have to work. And I've got enough to live comfortably. And I get to go to school. I go to City College in Santa Barbara. You know, I'll tell you a little bit. I'll sort of reverse things on you. What it's like now for me is, for the last two nights, I've been sitting in auditions for a play that I'm producing, that my wife and I are producing, in Santa Barbara Community Theater. Days of Wine and Roses, if you know that play or that movie. And normally, because we finish the auditions and we've cast everybody that we decided on, normally tonight we would be doing what's called a read-through, where the whole cast gets together and reads through the script together. But I had to tell them that, you know, we have to put the read-through off for a night because, for some reason, I said I'd go to Visalia. So it feels good to be up on stage because that's one of the things I do now in my life is about, I guess it's 4 or 5 years ago now, I retired. And my wife said, you better find something to do. And I said, well, I'll just do what I always do. You know, I'll go to my meetings and I'll go to do my panels and, you know, work with guys and play golf. And she said, no, no. She said, you need to find something to do. Otherwise, we're going to have trouble. Because I can't have you sitting around here all the time. Which is like, well, I thought that's what I was supposed to do now, is to sit around all the time, you know, watching Gilligan's Island in my underwear. But it turns out she had different thoughts. So she said, you know, you always talk about years ago when you used to do some acting and how you'd like to get involved in that again. So why don't you go up to City College and take a class? So I went up to City College and I registered. Now, I don't have a formal education. I quit school after the ninth grade, completely unscarred by education. And so this was a big deal to me. All of a sudden, now I'm going to City College. And I started taking acting classes. And I love it. And I had seen the play, so I got cast in something. I got cast in 12 Angry Men, if you know that story. You know, they said, you want to have a part? It's like, okay, what's it about? And they said, it's about being on a jury. I said, well, I've got a lot more experience as being the guy in the orange jumpsuit, but, you know, I'll give it a shot. So we did that, and then we did another one, and I got another part somewhere, and I got another part somewhere. And some years ago, I had seen the play Bill W. and Dr. Bob, which is the story about our co-founders' first meeting. And it's a great play if you've never seen it. If you ever get the opportunity, Bill W. and Dr. Bob. So my wife and I formed this little production company, and we put on, about 6 months ago, we did Bill W. and Dr. Bob at Center Stage Theater in Santa Barbara. And I got to be Dr. Bob. You know, that's the nice thing about having the production company is you get a part every time. And now, you don't have to be good or anything. You just, so I've just been having such a great time with that. And here, this is just another one of those things. Just this is a benefit of my participation in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm able to do this. So I have a great deal of gratitude. By God's truly amazing grace and the proven power of our steps, I haven't found it necessary to suck down any of that white port wine or use any of those outside issues, which is what I believe they call heroin nowadays, since January the 3rd, 1983. I'm very grateful for that. Thank you. I feel like when people do that, I feel like giving it up for God, you know, because It's not what I've done. It's what's been done through me, through this power that I found here. So in November of 1982, I was homeless in Sacramento. I was living on the streets. I was begging for money when I wasn't when I was sober enough, which wasn't very often. I did petty thievery, but most of the time I was too drunk, so I just begged. I'd stand at 15th and Broadway in front of the Tower of Books and with my hand out going, "Can you help me out? Can you help me out?" And I hated doing it, and I did it all the time. And I hadn't started out my life to get to that spot, but that's where I was. And I approached the last friend of mine who was still speaking to me, and she had her mom make up a little job for me. It was made up. You know, I moved some boxes around, I swept her garage, and she gave me $20. And I spent half of it on a bus ticket to Chico and the other half on wine. And I did what all tough guys do when they find themselves where I was. You know, I went home to Mom. And I showed up at Mom's drunk, as I had many times before. And when she answered the door, I said to her with all of the arrogance of the practicing alcoholic, "Don't worry about anything, Mom. I'm here to take care of you." And Mom, bless her heart, said, "I'm sorry, son, but you're dying, and I can't stand to watch it. So if it's what you got to do, you got to do it somewhere else." And she gave me $20. And I spent half of it on wine and half of it on a bus ticket back to Sacramento. And I rode away thinking, what just happened? My ace in the hole. You know, because you can always go home to Mom's. And now I couldn't do that. It wasn't long after that that I was standing in front of the Salvation Army waiting for a meal. I'm with a group of guys. And they had so many people want to eat that they're handing out color-coded tickets. And I'm a member of the blue group. I've got a blue ticket. And I have to stand outside, and there's traffic going by. And I'd lived in that town for a long time, and I thought, gee, I hope nobody I know sees me. Because, you know, I won't be able to explain how I don't really... This is a set of... You know, bad breaks and unfortunate circumstances and people who don't understand. That's the problem. And I looked down at myself, and I looked at the guys I was with, and I realized that I was exactly where I was supposed to be, and that I had put myself there. And I hated that information. But there's something about the truth, you know, when the truth comes to you, it goes to that place inside where truth resides. And it's not to be denied. You can try. I know I have many times about many things. But I knew. People have been telling me for years, you know, you ought to do something about your drinking. And I always thought, nah, it's you. You're my problem. Yeah. That and bad breaks and unfortunate circumstances and people who don't understand. That's the problem. Shortly after that, I was tramping around with this guy named Bob. Bob the Wino. And we were drunk somewhere. And Bob looked at me and said, "You know we're dying? You know that?" And I said, "Yeah, I don't care." He said, "I'll tell you what, man. I get a little money at the first of the month. Why don't we go to Santa Barbara and get sober?" And I said, "Sure." Now, Bob could have said, "Why don't we go to Denver and get drunk?" And I would have said, "Sure." Yeah. I had focused in on the fact he got a little money at the first time. That's what caught my attention. But he was a man of his word, and the first of the month came, and he bought us bus tickets, and we traveled to Santa Barbara together, and we were drunk on the trip, and we were drunk in that town for a couple of days, and then we got separated from each other, and I didn't see him for 6 weeks. And 6 weeks later, when I did see him, I was 6 weeks sober. And I was 6 weeks sober because on the trip down, Bob had said, "We'll go to AA when we get down there." And I said, "Oh, Alcoholics Anonymous, yeah, I've been there. I used to go when I was in the joint." I didn't go because I was an alcoholic. I went because it got me out of my cell, because there was coffee, sometimes pastry. Three people came in from outside. Some of them were women, real women. And I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't think it had anything to do with me. But when Bob said that, I said, "Oh, okay, good." So after we got separated from each other, I went looking for him, and I picked up the phone, and I looked up Alcoholics Anonymous in the phone book, and I found it. And I made the call. I made the call. A woman answered the phone. I said, "Have you seen Bob?" She said, "I know a few Bobs, honey, and how are you doing?" And we talked briefly, and I hung up the phone and went and drank some more, and then I walked up to where I'd seen the address, and I walked up to central office. I didn't know that's what it was. I thought it was the whole deal. I thought it was Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know about places like the Creative Center and churches and, you know, the places that we have, Alano clubs and all that stuff. I just thought I was going to turn myself in. And that started my journey into sobriety, and I haven't found it necessary to take a drink from that day to this one. I've been through, I've got almost 28 years now, and I've got 28 years of experience with life on life's terms. And my experience with that, with life on life's terms, is it's chicken one day and feathers the next. You know, you never know what's coming at you. I've had some really great times, and I've had some really sad times. My mom passed away. I was 7 years sober. By the time she passed away, it never occurred to me that anything would be helped by me taking a drink about it. What I really thought was, I can stay sober for Mom. She honored my recovery. I was estranged from my father for at least 15 years. We didn't communicate. And I was able to put a relationship back together with him. He passed on a couple of years ago. He was 90 years old. But we put it back together. And had some great times together, me and Pop. So, our book talks about families getting back together, and that's also been my experience. I mean, all of those promises and the things that the book talks about have happened in my life. New freedom and a new happiness. I comprehend the word serenity. I don't always have it, but I comprehend it. So I never know what I'm going to say when I get up here. I don't have a set thing that I do. I can tell you this much. The talk I give here this evening will not be nearly as good as the one I gave in the shower getting ready to come over here. That one was crisp. I wish several of you could have been there for it. Now, you'll notice I wasn't looking at anybody when I said that, that's an old joke I've used many times, just trying to get comfortable up here, but I delivered that line one time and realized I was staring right into somebody's eyes when I said it, and I'm pretty sure I made that guy nervous, you know what I mean? He was new and wondering what he'd gotten himself into. But before I forget, let me thank my friends Dale and Karen for showing up and buying dinner. Hey, cha-ching. You know, Karen happened to email me about something a couple of weeks ago, because I'm not real clear on all the geography, I know they sort of live around here. So I wrote back and said, how far are you from Visalia? And she wrote back and said, 100 miles, but we know you're coming, so we're going to come up and see you. And I wrote back and said, you know, I wouldn't travel 100 miles to see me. I got to tell you, it's just... So it's much appreciated, guys. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love some of the people in it, you know. Dale and Karen happen to be among them. One of the things, if you're newer with us, one of the things I think... when you know you're really starting to get sober is when you realize everybody in AA isn't wonderful. You know? Because what do they say? You take a drunken horse thief and you sober him up, and now you got a sober horse thief. So we don't all change immediately and get great. But I have met some really good people. Dale and Karen go into the prison there at Atwater, and we got involved through hospital and institution. I should tell you that I've been out of prison so long, they let me go back in now. You know, and that's just been a great... I've gotten to do many things in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was 15 years sober, I was hired to manage central office in Santa Barbara, the same office that I'd stumbled into 15 years earlier. So I got to do that. And when you're running central office, you get the chance to do a lot of stuff. And it's all great. But the thing that means the most to me, the thing that I get the most out of, is the work that I'm privileged to do in hospital and institution. I've had a panel at a place called CMC East for a long time. That's a level 3 yard. Most of the guys are lifers. And I've been going in there for about 20 years now. And some of those guys have been there all that time. But as Bill mentioned, every once in a while, somebody gets out. And it's just... you sit in those meetings inside, and if you're not involved in hospital and institution and you're looking for a commitment of some kind, if you're newer with us, welcome. Consider hospital and institution. It's not for everybody, but those of us who do it, we love it, and we love it a lot. And I had a man named Jack Prose, who was a great AA. I was sitting and talking to him, and he looked at me and he said, Jim, people who do hospital and institution work stay sober. And I believe he had 53 years of continuous sobriety at the time. And I thought, well, it was 53 years, I'm going to take your word for it. You know, there's just... here's an experience with going in. You know, I'm in a meeting at CMC one night, and a guy comes up and says, hey, man, you ever see these chips, 30 and 60 and 90-day chips? Not the metal chips. We can't have metal. But these look like poker chips. You ever see those? It's like, yeah, Donnie, I've seen them. Well, do you think you can find out, where we can get some and how much they cost? I'm sure I can. You know, I work at central office. I find this stuff out. But, Donnie, I've known you for a long time. You know, you're 12 years sober. What do you need with a 30-day chip? He says, oh, no, man, it's not for me. He said, there's a whole cell block full of guys here who have alcoholism and problems other than alcoholism. They're bipolar and manic depressive and schizophrenic, and they won't let them out of the cell block to come to this meeting. So what we've started doing is we're taking meetings into them, because that's how we do our H&I work, man. You know, guy got up one night and said, I'm an angel, I'm an alcoholic, and they just denied me parole again for a couple of years, and he was moving a little bit, understandably. And the next guy after him got up and said, my name's Andy and I'm an alcoholic and I'm doing life without the possibility of parole, and what I find it necessary to do is practice the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life so that I can live comfortably no matter where I am. And I looked at the people with me and I said, we can go home now. You know, I've heard everything I need to hear. So I always like to put in the plug for H&I. You know, it's just, there's a lot of stuff to be done. I'm not certain about your area, but I know most places, there are places where you don't need to have been out long yourself, or you don't have to meet any, you know, if you have criminal history, it's okay. There are usually the hospital aspect of things for sure. Some of the best meetings I've ever been to have been in hospitals. You know, I sponsored a guy named Bo. And he had just gotten out. And Bo was huge. He must have weighed 400 pounds. He was tall, but he was big. And he asked me, he said, you know what, I got a little spare time. Can I come down and help you out at the office? I said, sure, I got some data entry you can do. I need some help. So he came down and he was complaining about his hip. And I said, you know, go to the doctor. So he called me up and he said, hey man, I went to the doctor and they gave me Percocet. What do you think? And I said, well, you know, for guys like you and me, we have to be very careful. Because when those drugs get inside us, they don't know they're legal. So we need to stay in close communication about this, because whether you know it or not, your thinking is going to change. I'm not a doctor. I can't tell you whether you should be taking it or not. The doctor gave it to you. I would make sure you take it as prescribed. So we had that whole conversation. And a couple of weeks later, he called me and said, man, I went back to the doctor and they gave me Vicodin. What do you think? And I said, well, for guys like you and me, we've got to be careful because our thinking changes and the drugs don't know they're legal when they get inside of us. And we stay in close communication with me because it's important. And a few weeks after that, he called up and said, they just gave me a prescription for unlimited morphine and Seconal. What do you think? And I thought, you know, I'm proud to say that my first thought was, I think you're sick. My second thought was, did you say unlimited morphine? But Bo was sick for a year. He was a young man. He was 35 years old. They couldn't fix him. So we would take a meeting to him in the hospital, and then eventually they sent him home to die. And we would take him a meeting every week. Some of the best meetings I've ever been to, maybe 8 or 10 of us. He had a hospital bed in the middle of his living room. You know, he wasn't able to get out of it anymore. By then they were running the drugs straight into his spine. And every week he would share, and he would share about, you know, being scared and being angry and being happy and just all the stuff that he was going through. And he said, all my life I just wanted to belong somewhere. And I came here and I felt like I belonged with you guys, and now I've got to go. was the last meeting we had with him. He wasn't even conscious. But we had the meeting anyway. We just gathered around his bed and we had our meeting. And the next morning I woke up and thought, I better go see Bo because he wasn't doing much good last night. And I went, and I was standing next to his bed, and I was in the process of getting a divorce. And my ex and I weren't communicating well. So I'm standing beside Bo's bed, and she walks in because she was a friend of his also, and she had just happened to come to see him. And we stood on opposite sides of that bed, holding his hands, and he died. And we watched it. And you know, we walked outside, we started talking, and we got everything settled that we needed to get settled right then and there, because it put it in perspective for us what was truly important. Thought old Bo's given, you know, even after he's gone. So hospital work is there's a lot of stuff to do. I had hepatitis C and did treatment for it twice. And the second time, the first time I did interferon only for 6 months, and all my counts went down, and so I quit. And a couple of years later, everything had gone back up. So then I went and did they developed that new bundle that they have with the ribavirin. And I did that for a year. And it was, you know, I didn't have an easy time of it. You know, I had to inject myself 3 times a week and take these pills. And it was just, it was hard, but that's been 10 years ago now, and they can't detect any virus, so they're saying it's a cure. That's just for any of the, you know, people in the audience that that might be suffering or going through that stuff, that liver stuff. What else can I tell you about? Oh, I'm married. I told you that. You know, it's again. And, you know, I have a practice wife, and now I have a real one. I got married early in recovery. I started dating when I had 6 months. You know, I heard him talking that stuff about wait a year, and I thought, well, I've met him halfway. I'll love it. And I found something out. You know, I married that woman, and I didn't really know who I was. And as it began, we were married for 12 years. And she was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, still is. But we grew apart, and that kind of thing happens. So, you know, I never tell anybody you've got to wait a year. I don't tell anybody you've got to do anything, because I know they're going to do what they want to do anyway. But my experience that I can share is find out who you are first. You know, I loved my ex. I just didn't like her very much. And that's a painful thing to discover, and to have to separate out from somebody. So, relationships, money, service, I don't know what else. Probably looking at me thinking, he's deep in thought. And what's actually happening is I'm going, God help me, God help me, God help me. Well, I'll tell you one quick story and then I'll sit down. you know, running central office was great. It was a wonderful experience for me. And as I said, I had an opportunity to do many things. Well, I'm sitting there one day and this guy walks in. He's kind of shaky. And hey, man, I'm Lou. It's like, how you doing, Lou? Well, I'm not too good because I'm going back east. And I've never, you know, this is my first trip in sobriety. I've got 90 days. And I'm kind of nervous about leaving, being somewhere else. And, you know, you think there's any meetings where I'm going? I said, well, where are you going? I said, Crab Apple Cove, Maine. You know, I think something like that. So I get out the Eastern States directory and I go, yeah, here's somebody. So I make a phone call. It's like, hey, Ron. This is Tim. I'm in Santa Barbara Central Office. I got a guy here named Lou. He's coming your way, and he's kind of nervous about it. You think you could talk to him? Okay. So I hand Lou the phone, and I can see him go, oh. And I can just, as he's talking, I can see him decompressing. Thanks, man. Wow. You know, Ron said. About a week later, I get this call. Hey, Tim, it's Lou. I'm here with Ron. We just went to a meeting. You know, now we're going for ice cream. Everything's okay. And I thought, how cool is that? I get to be God's telephone operator. Great blessings in my life. Anybody who's new, I want to welcome you. Tell you that we're glad that you're here. We want you to know that you're welcome in this fellowship, that you're not alone anymore, that you don't ever have to drink again if you don't want to. I believe it now because it's been my own experience. Thanks for listening, guys.